Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
I'm obviously doing pretty good then for them to try to be a bit more mean with their past and that stuff. Maybe give me another couple of years. Hopefully we get up there with your guys' record.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Title 24, Episode 11, presented by NBC Sports. I'm Ricky Carmichael. There's Ryan Villopoto. We got a great show for you today. Really excited. We're going to have the 250 West champ, Jet Lawrence, on the show a little bit later. So make sure you listen to that. It's going to be good. Always fun to have the Lawrence brothers, and always good to talk about a champion. But before we get going here on what was a wild weekend, got to thank our great partners at United Motorsports, Boxo USA, and of course Quad Lock Case. So we appreciate you guys. And RV, I hate that cliche of this is, you know, anything can happen, but the last 2 weeks have been something that I have never seen ever in my life. You and I were talking before we started recording the show. I'm kind of still like I have a hangover from all the events that has taken place. And just what's your reaction on Denver and Eli Tomac?
Definitely something that didn't see coming, you know, like not a crash, nothing really happened here. Just Eli going over the tabletop, and right there you can see a big, just like a big just a big G out, and maybe he was a little too far back on the balls of his foot. Whatever may happened, he, you know, tore his Achilles tendon, which I have never done that. You know, I've heard it's a pretty substantial injury. Just a bummer to see. You can't even, we're seeing the replay right here. Can't put pressure on it as he's walking into the Alpinestars mobile medical unit. And just unbelievable, to be honest. You know, I mean, nice cushion with points lead coming in. Like, there's really not a lot of pressure. He just had to finish, and something just crazy and catastrophic like this happens to him. And like you said, I have never seen anything happen like this in of the years of watching and racing myself.
It's nuts, because you think of a guy like Eli Tomac or yourself or a McGrath or, you know, Dunge. It's like even me for that matter, or like you just, it's one of those things you just like, he's good enough. He's proven enough. You don't make mistakes like that. And it just like, that's why I thought that it was Eli's to lose. I'm like, there's no way what happened could have happened. That's why the last 2 weeks, I'm just like, I don't have an explanation. I've gotten some of my analysis wrong because there's just no rhyme or reason.
I don't know if it's what the question is was it a mistake or was it just something, you know, there's parts of the body like that, you know, that just can just give out, you know, or certain little things, you know, they're putting their bodies, every part of their bodies through, here it is right here again, right there.
Yeah.
Just bottomed out a bit, ankle, just, you know, you're putting their body through the ringer, right? Week in, yep. Week out, you know? So, was there a mistake? I don't really know. I'm sitting here watching it again, and we have some replay, and we've watched it over and over, practice laps, qualifying laps, right? Yeah, there you can see it really zooms in.
Yeah, the full extension right there. And yeah. you brought something up. Like, Eli has always been known for riding on the balls of his feet. And if you listen to some of the coaches, they'll tell you, I mean, that's proper. That's what you want to do. And RV, like, just explain to everyone what you think maybe have happened. And it wasn't a mistake, but like his footing and what possibly.
Yeah. So just as he jumped over the tabletop there, single over table, Maybe he didn't get the backside exactly what he wanted, and it kind of pushed him into the takeoff a little bit harder than normal. And potentially he could have been like, I know he said in a comment, in a quote that he made, is like, I really strength that Eli has. And what he said was his riding on the balls of his feet a lot, being able to stand up through turns and things like that. And right here, maybe he just hung the rear wheel just off the backside a little bit, a little deep, and it bottomed the forks out. Along with that, maybe he could have moved his ball of his foot forward by a couple millimeters, and that would have saved it. But honestly, like to talk about it like a mistake, I don't see a mistake. Honestly, I don't. I just see a moment that something catastrophic happens, and he rolled and then doubled again, and he looked down at his boot. Like, what just happened? I'm sure he was in pain. Did I break something in my foot, you know, and come to find out it was Achilles, you know, so, which is not one you really want to do. And I would say definitely not one you want to do it at his timing and in his career.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I don't want to speculate, you know, I did say this on the broadcast, RV, and this is my opinion. I would have been thinking like, this is bigger than, okay, first thing, all right, you know, you're hosed, like, okay, well, there goes my championship. I'm not winning championship. But then you look at life and big picture, like right here. Okay. He knows he's hosed. Mm. Like, can you imagine the emotion right there that's going through? Like, is he thinking I'm done forever? Like, do you think I shouldn't sit here and speculate? I just,
I can put it this way, Ricky. I said, can you imagine if this would have been, let's flop this, and that would have been Chase in this position first time. Can you imagine first timer? I mean, at least Eli in this position in his career, I'm looking at it from the standpoint of like, okay, if this is the end all be all, what, like, and like I said, we're not speculating, but let's just say this is what it is. And I think he goes out happy with a successful career. But if you were chasing this scenario, you'd be completely bummed, right? First championship on the line, and this were to happen, something like that, right? So I think Eli's sitting in a great position. He's got to go get it really evaluated, right? Get it looked at. Go to the best doctors for something like this. I know football players, and you know, though it's probably a common injury in that sport, in football, I would only think soccer probably too. And find the right doctor to see what is the timeline. What do we have here? You know, we might see him back for sure. You know, more than likely as a racer, mentality wise, I'd say he.
So you're saying he's coming? You're saying he's coming back? You have?
I don't know if I'm saying he's coming back, but I think from our mentality, the way we all grew up, the way where our dads and moms are put pressure on us in a good way to always get back. Or maybe, you know what, he's got kids now, and he just says, "Look, I've had a great career. Peace. I'm out." I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to see. To be continued.
Yeah. I mean, no one knows better than he does. So we'll have to wait and see what he says. I mean, listen, from a sports perspective, I'd love to see him come back. And just probably for a peace of mind, that would be great if he could come back to win. So we'll see. I mean, like I said, there you go. Star Racing put out a post on the gram, lots of memories, look back on, be thankful for these past few seasons. Time to get our champ healthy and on the road to recovery. So we'll see what happens. I just hate it for him. I hate it for Eli. I hate it for his sponsors. I hate it for the sport. I hate it for his family. And I hate it for the fans, you know, especially going into the Pro Motocross Championship. But there's still a lot to look forward to. So that's enough on Eli. Moving along to Chase Sexton. I mean, hey, right place at the right time. You got to be in it to win it. And man, what a plot twist. I couldn't, you know, we talk about the emotions. Before we go to our sound on tape, what's your initial reaction on Chase and his performance there, just how he was riding?
Well, you know, I think, you know, we've had lots of talks about, here he is making the pass on AC here, but there's been lots of talks all season about Chase, you know, mistakes, little mistakes, ending up on the ground, putting himself in bad positions and things like that. But, you know, he said this before in press conferences in the past, I just need to stick with it. You know, I need to stick with this. And he ultimately, you know, figured it out and has kept himself in this position where, you know, 16 down, and then we have a catastrophic injury like this from Eli, and now he's sitting there with the points lead. So you know, we still have one race left to go, but But I think he's done a phenomenal job with just with sticking in it. That's as a racer, that's the only thing you really can do, right? Is just keep pushing forward, working on the motorcycle, working on yourself, figuring out, trying to figure out what the problem is, but not overanalyzing it either. I think a lot of people overthink it and really like start making, not making things up, but really kind of start pulling at straws that really aren't there. And I think he's done a really good job at that, is not getting into a tailspin, Chase has, and just trying to execute what he knows, what he needs to do, and work on the bike. So the team's obviously, you know, made him a little more comfortable, or found a setting, or found something that he's able to go out and ride the way he wants to ride, but also just sticking with it. You know, I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, we have some sound on tape from the champion elect. Let's get his take on it.
It definitely was not easy at all. I've said before, it's tough to even, when those were going on, to even go on my phone, just between people texting me, trying to help, or everyone having their own opinions on what my problem was. And then going on Instagram, social media, just seeing the comments, and it was tough, honestly. It kind of weighed a toll on me, and I got a little bit negative middle of the season. And some of those crashes, I think, were caused just by being negative and not having confidence in myself, knowing that I can win these races. And I think just having that break after Seattle, having another crash while leading, I needed something just to clear my head. I didn't ride really at all that week. I didn't train. I just told myself I need a break. And then I went, hung out in Santa Barbara, where my trainer is, and I just kind of reset. And came back, did some testing, and from here on out, it's been super solid. Those race wins definitely helped the confidence, and it's just you gotta push through that. Like I said, when that stuff was going on, you gotta try and stay positive. And I knew I could dig myself out of it, and it was just a matter of time.
Yeah, totally. I think, and back to what I was mentioning about tailspin, like being in a position like that, it didn't happen once, it didn't happen twice, it didn't happen three times. It was like four and five times that this had happened.
He created that monster.
He did, right? So like, good on him and the team to keep him from getting into a tailspin and just trying to reinvent the wheel, because we've had people in the industry in the past, you know, and probably still today, that it was like, they're just pulling at strings. And it's never their fault. It's always something else. Right. So I think he didn't deviate too far from what, you know, where he had the speed and the he was comfortable on the motorcycle and things like that. He just had to work maybe a little bit on the motorcycle and maybe a bit more up in his head. And, you know, he was able to just to get away, get a clear mind and come back, and he kept himself in it.
Yeah. I think it was Atlanta RV where he was talking about things that he changed, and he started to focus on the last 10 laps rather than the first 10 laps. And if that's what he's been doing, I think he was talking about it like during the week or something, prepping. You remember that?
Yep, you're right.
I started worrying about the last 10, and dude, ever since then, he's won 4 out of the last 7 races. So that's great for him. And you know this better than anyone. When you know where you need to work, that's when you can start improving. You have to know where the problem is to fix it. Ever since he's done that, he's been great. The mud race, I really don't count that as a real race. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a real race, but you know, not.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, it's yeah.
And so, great job, Chase. And it, you know, even though everyone was tough on him, you know, at the beginning of the series, it's so cool to see him be able to turn it around. It is so hard. You've done it. We've done it. It's really hard to do that. Really, really hard to do that. So great job. But we got some sound on tape, and he talks about his situation and the championship and how he has become the champion. Because listen, I don't know if I should say this, but I'm gonna say it. There's no shot Eli is turning up at Salt Lake. So
no, I will back you on that one. Zero chance.
I didn't see
you don't ride off the track that way, obviously, in that much pain. You know, you just and can't even put pressure on it walking into the Asterix Mobile Medical, and you think you're going to come back in 5 days. I mean, anything can happen, I guess. I mean, it is what it is. But I would bet that that's not happening.
I would have bet you that what happened to Tomac this weekend
wasn't going to happen.
So, but yeah, I think Yeah, unless something happens to Chase during the week, there's no reason for Eli to show up at this point. It's a pretty substantial injury he has. But the champ elect gave us his thoughts and what he thinks about the championship.
I mean, yeah, it hasn't really sank in, and I don't know. It's like I said, you never know until you get to the last race. I haven't heard anything, obviously. So it's just, yeah, I've obviously been saying that it's just never over till it's over, and it's 17 races, so it's tough to see Eli go out like that, like I said. And yeah, it's definitely a little bit weird coming in being so far down, and just not hoping that anything would go wrong, but hoping I just go out there and put my best foot forward and win these last few races and see what happened. And yeah, I guess really the mindset stays the same, but we'll see in the coming week what goes on. And I don't know. I don't really know what to say at this point.
Yeah, no, I think it's he's sitting in a great position, you know, and on the verge of winning his very first, you know, 450 championship. And
hey, tell our listeners and viewers like what we're talking about off air and the emotion that he's going through like right now. Probably wasn't going there to expect to win the championship. Yeah, anything can happen, whatever. But like, explain to everyone like what you would be feeling in his situation right there.
Yeah, you know, I think it's probably a little overwhelming, right? Coming off the track and then, you know, first of all, it's awesome. He just, you know, he's got it good up on the podium, just took the win. Didn't really know what happened to Eli, right? Because that was all behind him. You know, or seen him pull off the track, you know, so got the win there. So he's excited about all that. And then come to find out, hey, Eli's out and there's a whole bunch of different emotions. And part of it was probably like right on, like not right on that he's hurt, but right on, like we can win this thing now. And then the other part of it's probably, you know, not wanting to win a championship this way either, you know? So, doesn't matter. They all go down in the books the exact same. But there might be a little bit of an asterisk next to this one, but it is what it is. You know, the checks cash the same.
That's right. I wouldn't be
switching any other, you know, if that were me in that scenario, I'd be like, yeah, it is what it is.
Cash your couple mil roll.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I wasn't the best guy, or I was as good as Eli, but made way too many mistakes on my shoulders. But in the end of the season, I ended up winning. And that, like I said, those checks cash the same. So, yeah, the emotion side of it, like you can see, he's a little bit like almost unsure, like, you know, trying to figure out like, holy cow, this really just happened, you know? And then that's starting to probably set in on him, like 40, you know, now it's almost too
good to be true. So technically for everyone listening and watching, here's the scenario. Kenny's too far back. Webb is too far back. They are mathematically eliminated. If Chase didn't show up and Eli didn't show up. So get that off the table. So it's a bit between those two guys, and we're going to role play. So if Sexton didn't show up and Eli didn't show up, the race, the championship would go to Sexton because he has the points advantage. Okay. So that's why they're pretty much saying that Sexton is our champion elect, because Eli's not showing up for all intents and purposes because of his injury. If something happened and you know, like has never happened ever in on planet Earth, and he got his Achilles fixed or went there and casted up his ankle and somehow was able to ride and Sexton didn't ride, he would have to earn 7 points. Then they would tie on points and Eli would win because he would break the tiebreaker. He has more wins. Now,
more wins.
We've seen some crazy stuff happen the last 2 weeks, but this is really going out on a limb here. So
it is. It's just a crazy, crazy story, man. Like we were talking about it earlier, and it's been 20 years since, you know, Honda is going to win a premier class, right? You know, you, RC, that was with you, you know, so that's, it's, I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't think I'm that old, right? Here you are right here.
Yeah. Salt Lake City, 2002. That was the first time Honda had won a Supercross championship since MC. So man, that was a great night. I was so excited, and I didn't think I was going to win the championship that year because I busted it pretty hard at the season opener in Anaheim and had to limp along. But David Buehlmann ended up getting hurt for Daytona, so we were able to close the points gap up. But that was a special night, special for the team. But moving along
I see over here, largest comeback in history. So is that the one that had the step up into a set of whoops and LaRocco ran you over?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the one. That's the one. I was trying to explain it to Aaron on the show the other day, and he's like, I don't know which one that is. Yeah, okay, yeah. So
Yeah. That was a nasty one. Came out of nowhere. But Adam Ciancerulo, heck of a ride. I love his honesty. And listen, it's kind of like Chase Sexton is, you got to be in it to win it. These guys are in it. All the other guys have had issues, some of them by their own fault. But just, I always love his emotion. He's a great, great, great kid. He's one of those guys. You just can't not like him. He's real with himself. He doesn't make excuses. And what do you think? Like, where are you at? Where are you at with AC?
I've spent a lot of time with AC from amateur as he was still on a super mini, and then when he first started riding supercross. So I am quite fond of AC and dealing with a lot of, you know, his career as a whole has had a lot of injuries, you know, and it is par for the course of our sport. He's just been one more of the unlucky ones, and now he's dealing with something in his arm, a nerve deal, you know. So I heard he's supposed to try to get some different treatment coming up this next week, and things like that.
Stem cell.
So, you know, hopefully that, you know, kind of can clear everything up completely, right? So, yep. But watching and getting to see the emotion after, you know, getting that podium, you know, it's been a long time coming for him. And, you know, he just keeps clicking away, working at it. You know, I think he's we got a soundbite we can go ahead and listen to, you know. I think it is really cool to see, you know, like he's been working very hard at it.
I'm lost for words. This last couple years has taught me a lot about myself. And I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't sure if I would ever be up here again. And obviously, got a bit of a gift there with Eli. I hate to see somebody go out like that. I hope he's okay. And Ken and Chase were riding great. I just wanted to take it home. That was the longest 20 minutes of my life. Man, I just can't. Hate to be that guy, but I can't say enough good things about the people around me that believed in me when nobody else did. I believed in myself. I fought every day. I'm going to keep fighting. Man, I'm at a loss for words. Thank you, everybody. They say a winner is just a loser that kept trying. This one's for all the losers out there.
That was a great interview. That was a great interview, you know.
Dude. So
really show the emotions, man.
I have a question. But first let's recognize Ken Roczen and an epic ride. Falling down dead last. Again, listen, it's not a stacked field, but still hard to do that. Kenny was in a great place. So like, dude, he's messing with me on some inside stuff we have going on. Just about old times and some people that we've worked with together. He's texting me like after his heat race and all that stuff during the broadcast. But I felt like that was some of the best riding that he's done all year long. Outside of everyone being gone.
Yeah, I mean, dude, any gone or not, you still have all the other guys you still have to come through. Okay, yeah, you had a few others that you didn't have to come through, but putting her down in the first turn is no easy feat to come back and make up the difference. It may have been a little bit easier for this particular weekend because maybe a little bit of the track layout. I was at altitude, so a lot of, you know, anybody outside the top 10 probably bikes aren't as good as obviously the factory bikes. So there's a bigger disadvantage there. obviously fitness is going to be a bigger disadvantage there. So he probably was able to make up some pretty good moves a bit quicker than he would, you know, at another specific, another race. But as for coming from last up to third, or second, you know, that was pretty impressive. Like,
yeah,
bike must be working well. Yeah, yeah. The bikes, you know, I mean,
he
that whole
good
team,
on the
you
bike.
Gotta, yeah, you got to give it up to that whole team, right? Like, I mean, we've talked about it before on the show. These guys basically put a program together with a snap of a finger after the Honda thing had went south. And it was like, where are we going to end up, right? Where's Kenny going to end up? And then, you know, it was over there with Pipes, and they put that program together. And like I said, pretty quick. So they've done a phenomenal job racing against these factories that that have been around for many, many years.
Yeah, I have a question for you. So, and I talked about this on the broadcast, and I want to know your thoughts. A guy like Adam Ciancerulo, who was a phenomenal amateur rider, he was great in his early pro years. Yeah, he had some injuries, but he had speed. He knew how to win. He eventually comes back and redeems himself after he lost the Supercross Regional Championship in Vegas and wins the Outdoor Pro Motocross Championship 250 class. Do you feel a guy like that who knew how to win as a young kid, knew how to win at the professional level, even though he has had a lot of injuries as of late the last couple of years, now that he's starting to run up front and he has the pace, do you think that once he learns that feeling, he can get back to where he can be on the podium and fight for wins? Or do you think that he's had too many injuries? Like,
I think I think if AC is what, say 100%, healthy, you know, like you said, the kid knows how to win. The kid knows how to race. He's got pretty good race craft. I do think
the winning feelings, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I do think that if AC is 100% healthy, and just, he can ride to, like he just rode out there at, Colorado. I definitely see we see him up on the podium. I don't know if we see AC like championship for in the 450 class, but I by no means do not count him out for seconds, thirds, some wins. But as for as a championship, not 100% sure about that. I can't answer on that. I'd love to see it, but don't know about that. But I do think that knowing from him, because he's been in this rut for so long. So here's the kicker for me is like he stayed in it. He stayed with it, with all the adversity, with all the hard times that he's had, with all the injuries, like he still never gave up. Right. So now that he sees the end of the light and sees some a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And if he can keep this, getting this thing better, getting the arm better, getting that nerve better, and it's finally done. And he gets, say, a season. Let's get a whole year under your belt that you, with no injuries at that point. I do think that we see him up inside the top five every single weekend before he's done.
That's I felt the same thing. That's why I was like, man, I wonder what RV thinks of that. That is perfect. Before we get to our quad lock question of the week, real quick, I want to touch on RJ Hampshire and Kitchen. That was a hell of a battle. I think that was the best that I've seen RJ ride. And what I mean by that is, like, when I watch him, he sends it. There's no doubt about that. He rides that edge a lot like I did. You were comfortable riding that edge as well. But RJ, I mean, he goes for it. But when I watched him this weekend, he didn't look like he had those little bobbles and like where the tire would slip much compared to what he normally does. He just looked really sound and really spot on and comfortable on that bike. What do you think about that ride?
I do agree. I think the biggest thing I saw was he was closing in on Levi and then got up next to him and Levi held his line. They didn't touch or anything. And then I almost felt like he could have stayed on the track and like jump that double, but
he hit neutral.
What it was?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He hit neutral. Yeah. So,
okay, so Rhea coming up right here, Levi makes a little mistake. And then RJ was able to get around him. And then right here, he must have hit neutral.
Yeah.
Saves it. And I think right now is in RJ in his position. And what I've seen in the past is the wheels fall off, right? Like I have to get back up and then he goes down again. So I think what I see here is the maturity, the becoming a better racer, even though he like rides on the edge, which that's how I was. That's how you were.
Yep.
It gets the job done. I prefer to see guys ride like that because it's exciting.
Yeah.
But he's always had mistakes with that. So like that right there to me was, I think, a big spot where he grew right there, because I think that would perfect scenario to go down again, put yourself in a bad position, heart rate spiked and try to come back. But he didn't. He held it together and just plugged away and then sucked Levi up actually really quick once he got back to, you know, back to ground level.
It was cool. And as you know, that's a nice boost going into the showdown. So I think he'll be for sure a contender this weekend at Salt Lake for the East-West showdown. That's always fun. Quad lock question of the week. All right. It's from Bo Hero. This is your Instagram handle. We appreciate you reaching out and to collect on your quad lock case and all your goodies. Slide into the DM. You know the deal. You listen to RV and I every week. We appreciate that. Bo Hero asks, do you think Roczen looks at Chase and thinks he made a mistake going to Suzuki because he had a great season and maybe if he stayed on Honda and worked on the bike, he would be in the championship fight? Take it away, bro.
I do not think he looks at that as a mistake. I think that the Honda and Kenny thing had ran its course. I think that Kenny was looking for something different. Maybe he didn't know it at the time. Yeah. I think it was a good change. He was looking for something different. I don't know if they had an idea what that was going to be. But I do think that the change has in now that it's panned out, we've seen the success that the team has and that what they've had with Kenny. I do think that he's probably happier where he's at right now. I think that it's that at Honda, Kenny and Honda had ran its course and it was on the way out, in my opinion.
Yep, 100%. The relationship had gone had turned bad. Kenny was ready to go, so I agree with you 100%. Now I want to share this because I've been in this spot. RV, you obviously ran your whole course, and your whole career at Cowie, but in 2004, and we've told this story a million times. Of like, I wanted to stay at Honda, and they weren't meeting the marks on some other things like financially and all that crap that I was asking for, but I loved that CRF 450. I thought it was a great bike. And I knew that if I was going to re-sign with Honda, I was going to be on that bike for 2005. And man, dude, honestly, straight up, I loved it. And I don't know what bike that you've raced throughout your professional career where you're like, man, I just really, really, really love this bike. So once I had signed my Suzuki contract and have never ridden a Suzuki ever in my life, I was like bittersweet, dude, because I knew, I'm like, oh my gosh, I am leaving an absolute gem. This bike is so good. It was almost like, it was the best bike I've ridden. So Chase Sexton looks pretty darn comfortable. They've been testing, getting it better. Do you think Chase could get to that point to where he's like, man, this thing's pretty good. Honda's busted their tail to get it just right for me. Do you think there's a point right here where he could be thinking like, dude, maybe I shouldn't have went with KTM?
you little buyer's remorse, maybe.
That's dude. And I can speak from it because I was there. Like, I had signed my Suzuki contract. And like I said, I was bittersweet. I'm like, I can't believe I'm leaving this bike right here because I know it would be a darn good year.
Yeah, no, I think there could be a little buyer's remorse there, you know, on that. But I also think that, you know, you didn't have anybody that you were competing against directly head to head, say, as your teammate, right? So in Chase's position, we know we have Jet moving up and we know we have Hunter moving up too. We don't know exactly when, but he is going to be moving to that 450 spot. So honestly, I think if you're Chase, I think there's probably like, hey man, I wish I would have liked to stayed, but I already know what's in the pipeline. It's probably not as bad as it was for you, I guess, because, you know, with Hunt, like I said, with Hunter and Jet coming up, you know, I think that we all know that's, they're kind of the golden goose, right? Both of them.
And they are.
Take nothing away from Chase. It is what it is. Those boys right now, are on another level, marketing purposes, for interview purposes. I mean, there's nothing that they're not doing right now.
They've earned it.
They've earned every step of the way, right? So you can't look at them and be like, okay, well, you know, kind of be like, man, these guys, I'm just, you know, it is what it is. I think that he has to make that switch. I think he does.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. I would have been bummed. That's for sure. I was bummed.
I'm sure he is bummed.
Complete buyer's remorse. But and I wasn't even thinking of that. Like, that's why I love your vision on that. Yeah, you're right. I wasn't worried about another teammate coming up or anything, and it would be tough.
Yeah, how's that dynamic, right? The dynamic with Honda, you know, obviously with Jet and Hunter being brothers and the success they've had, Honda's going to want to keep them together. They're the most marketable guys out there right now, rightfully so. Nothing against Chase, but I think that, you know, let's hope that the KTM suits him as good or better, because I'd love to see him come out and be able to fire on all cylinders right away on that motorcycle.
Right.
And put those two boys a run for their money, right, on the right. Honda. So, I mean, it's going to be a great.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Great story if he can do that. It's going to be phenomenal.
Before we get to Jet, a little topic, and we could talk forever on this, is, you know, a lot of people online and in the chat rooms talking about, like, what's different? Like, why are there so many injuries? And I would love to get your insight on what you think your initial reaction would be to, why are all these guys going down? And, you know, people trying to point fingers and, oh, the tracks are this, the bikes are this, or blah, blah, blah. There's too much racing. And I think, and I want you to hear me out with this, is you look at how many races there are. Okay. Everyone, we're not racing many more races. If you count all the side hustle, money and races that the guys go do after the championship here. It's very close to when I raced, to when you raced, when McGrath raced, all those guys. So that's pretty much the same. The tracks, I think the motocross tracks are a little bit faster in general. There's not as many tight corners, especially like a Red Bud. I love Red Bud, but you go watch some footage from 97, 98, it's much, much tighter. Mm. But the biggest thing is the speeds of the motorcycles, like a 450. When I, how fast they are, you don't realize how fast they are until you hop on a 250 two stroke. Like when I would ride my RM 250, I was blown away at how slow it was compared to a 450. I'm like, dude, this thing was the bike of its field in 2005. And now, like, dude, that thing is so slow. And the bikes have gotten faster, but the one thing that has never changed is gravity. So my opinion is I don't think it's the tracks. I don't think it's the schedule. I just think the biggest thing that's changed are the speeds.
I agree. You're hitting everything so much faster. And I've done straight rhythm on two strokes. I actually raced a KX250 as an amateur because they didn't have a 450, not to mention I was a bend too small for it anyways. But I had to race a 250F and then a 250 two-stroke for the 250 class because that's all they had. And you go and I can relate to straight rhythm because you come right out of, you know, your current day 450s and then you pop on, hey, let's go race straight rhythm. And then you go and ride those things in Supercross. And it's literally night and day different. I mean, Mitch built me a fire breathing YZ250 and right. it can't hold a candle to a stock 450. No, I mean, it's not even in the same ballpark. Right. To put that even to better perspective, a good 250F, not a factory 250F, but a good 250F, to my YZ250, the 250F is probably better than a YZ250. So, at that, you know, so yes, I believe it's speed. I don't think it has to do with
necessarily. Yeah, do you think it's the tracks? Do you think it's the schedule? It's, like what?
It's not the tracks. It's not the schedule. I'm going to agree that it's the speed. And I think that you got to, like we were talking about speed, Eli's specific scenario right here. If that was put him on a 250F or put him on a 252 stroke right there, he's going to be going over the table to actually probably the line of choice would have been on off. Because right. going over, there's no way a 252 stroke is going to triple that up to the next one. So he would have been on off and then finished out the combination that way.
Yeah.
Once again, a 450 coming up before the finish line this weekend, the either the wall tabletop or if you wanted to double that thing before the finish line, hitting that wall jump. Hitting that on a 252 stroke, probably 6 miles an hour slower, 5 miles an hour slower. It's just a whole different way of riding a motorcycle. And then also how much faster those 450s are. So honestly, it just comes down to power. What do they do about it? There's nothing you really can do about it. It's just our sport. It's like, right. Every time we get out there, we know the risk. It's like the bull riders. Do you think those bull riders are like, hey man, I'm scared of doing this. It's in their blood. It's what we do. I mean, right. It sucks. It does. It sucks to have guys get hurt and we're in this, you know, call it dangerous sport, but it's also a sport everybody loves.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, and that's the thing. It's like we were talking off air here and it's like, this is going to be a great topic after this weekend, Salt Lake. So everyone tune in next week, Title 24, because we can get in more to the weeds of what RV and I's thoughts are, but that's what I think it a lot of it is, you know, outside of everyone else's what they think it is and too many races, blah, blah, blah.
But to your point about the outdoors, you know, like I can remember going to High Point. I first started riding High Point and a lot of off cambers, Steel City, a lot of off cambers, a lot of tight sections, but now you go back to High Point now and it's very, very, very high speed. So I do not think it's the tracks necessarily that way. I do think that we can slow the tracks down. But as for Supercross, though, we use the entire floor anyways. And then if you make the Supercrosses any much more tighter, then everybody's going to be complaining about, hey, there's no passing. We can't pass this, that. The fans are going to be pissed because there's no passing. And so Supercross is kind of what Supercross is. But I totally agree with outdoors. It needs to be slowed down.
Yeah. We're going to pay some bills here. United Motorsports, thank you very much. Like I said, we got to hang out with the crew there from United Motorsports at Nashville. It was a lot of fun. So check them out, unitedmotorsports.com. And remember, use the code TITLE24 for 10% off site-wide. Check them out. And if you're around Ohio or Kentucky, they got 6 locations. You can pop in. You can get yourself a Boxo, the Boxo USA toolkit. Toolbox, whatever you want. Boxo USA, thank you very much. They make great stuff. They got a cool, really adventure bike roll bag that we bring on our adventure rides. They got great stuff. And then, of course, Quadlock Case. So the guys from Quadlock came over from Australia. They were in tow this week. We got to eat dinner with them and hang out with them, show them Monster Energy Supercross, and they were grabbing some stuff from Jet Lawrence. Jet Lawrence is a Quadlock athlete, but great company. I got some new accessories. They make a magnetic charger RV. It's really cool.
Oh,
that way, because I live before this, I was living life on the edge. Like I was always draining my battery and like always like 20%. And then they got a little magnetic wallet that you can put your credit cards and stuff in there as well. So
cool. So that's me. See Quadlock. See Quadlock. You guys sent me a bunch of stuff, but I'm a wallet guy with my phone. So like I'm now just that way. So I have this. So I will be needing that because I'm a wallet guy with my phone.
It is really cool, but great. Always great when we get to have our partners at the races. And like I said, use that promo code Title24 and get you 10% off site wide. And we appreciate all our partners. So couldn't do it without you guys.
This night has all been about a championship aboard his Honda HRC machine. Jed Lawrence is the 250 West champion. We tell you week in, week out what a star Jed Lawrence is. Have a look at the company he is keeping. The four-time club, along with Ricky, James Stewart, Ryan Villopoto, 250 career titles.
Well, there he is, the 250 West Coast champion, Jed Lawrence. Welcome to Title 24. Fantastic job. Congratulations. You've had a day or two to let it sit and think about it. And how's it feel, champ?
Nah, thanks. Thank you so much. A pleasure to be on. It's an honor to be on here with you lads. Get up with the same guys that's on that list also. But no, it feels good. It's kind of the fourth one now is kind of like set in a little bit now. It's a cool thing. It's like I don't really think till after when they were showing us like the names that was up there. Obviously, you two guys were up there, James, and just to be up there on names, I'm like, damn, I'm with some legends up there. It's actually kind of sick. So it kind of took a bit at first because at first, like, okay, so yes, it's another championship. That's always good. And like kind of my mind was still like is set on 450 now, like focusing on that because that's like the next big task for me. And it didn't really sink into like a day or so after. I'm like, holy, oh, that's actually kind of sick. That's a sick ass. I'm like, there's no way. So, no, it's awesome.
Yeah, no, that's good to see, man. Congratulations. Hey, I got a question. Just jump right into it. Like, I know, what was the hardest championship? I think I heard you say something about maybe this one being the toughest. Once you win them a couple, the first one seems to be hard in a different way. And then you come back and you get it gets a little easier. But I guess the last one in the 250 classes is kind of on your way out. Do you think this one was harder to win than any of the other three?
No, this is probably one of my easiest ones, I would say. I think my hardest championship out of all four of them, I think would have been my first one in outdoors. I think that was the most challenging because my starts weren't that great that year. I was versing Justin Cooper and he was always up front for his starts, you know. So it was that was probably the most difficult one. I got into a pretty deep slum, you could say, through that season in 21. But since then, I mean, the championships have been fairly, I wouldn't say easy, but fairly decent. I mean, the last two have been the easiest, obviously, with how many wins I've got on both of them. The second one was still pretty difficult in Supercross because I got a few wins, but not every race I won at. I still had I got lucky in the end with kind of McAree crashing and RJ having a few bad ones. So, but I'd definitely say the last two have been the most easiest.
So, okay, good, yeah. You're an East Coast champ and a West Coast champ, and there's always been a whole bunch of talk. Like guys are like racing the West Coast are like, oh, I like the East Coast tracks better, or vice versa. So you being a champion in both coasts, which coast do you like better, and which coast? Actually, I shouldn't say which coast has the more heat, but which coast do you like better as far as tracks go?
I'd say I think it's East because I feel like. I feel like East Coast has more of those pretty cool name tracks. Obviously, you have the two speedway tracks that you don't get on West. You get, and I feel like they're a lot more technical and rutted, especially Indianapolis this year. I mean, that was one of the most rutted ones. I mean, we had Oakland this year that was pretty rutted in the rhythms and got pretty beat down, which was like close to an East Coast, but as far as kind of known name, like stadiums or like kind of excitement around it, was, I mean, more so Anaheim 1. That kind of was like the big name one for like the West Coast side of things. And then after that, it's kind of like they're all just not like they suck. It's not like they suck. They're just like there's not much hype around them as much as like Daytona, Atlantica. It's a speedway. It's something different. Besides, like, yeah, the Triple Crown's obviously, the East West Shootout's obviously exciting and that sucks. You have both coasts, but I would say East Coast. I like the East Coast tracks the most just because it's more technical. You get rutted, track gets beat down where you have to be thinking the whole race. You can't just go brain dead and just keep on hitting the same rhythm. You actually have to think of, okay, when's this line going to break down? Okay, I have to change this rhythm. I have to go 2-3 instead of going 3-3 or whatever it was. So I'd say East Coast, more my favorite, I'd say.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. You definitely have to stay on your game when the track breaks down. I'm sure you've seen some plywood that comes through and really makes the track technical. And as ruts go away, which ones are going to catch your foot pegs and things like that. So it can get pretty sketchy. Like you said, Indy was insane this year.
Yeah, no. And the biggest thing is for me as a rider, it was a lot nicer because you could kind of tell whether the rider's good or not. Like this year when we had the more rough rutted tracks, like you could say Anaheim was fairly rutted, Oakland was pretty rutted. I don't think anyone else had really rutted ones, but those are two main ones I probably excelled the best on, that I got a decent gap. I don't think so much in Anaheim 1. I think then I was just kind of just keeping it calm, but it got technical. You had to be smart. Oakland, I mean, I was cruising for most of it. I was still kind of gapping the guys out. Where you had San Diego, I didn't have much of a gap just because there's a lot more tamed down tracks. They didn't have as much dirt. Didn't get as rutted. From what I remember, Arizona, it was a pretty like basic track. Didn't get rutted. So there wasn't like, there was a limit to speed. So I couldn't kind of go into my kind of corner speed and that stuff, or that technique of, hey, you have to hit this line every single time. The one track that I think the guys were a lot closer to me was at Seattle. That was really rutted, but that's the night I think I rode terrible. I missed so many rhythms. So, but the boys that night, I remember they were pretty on it. RJ and McAdoo, from what I remember.
Yeah, they were certainly feeling pretty spicy. And do you ever feel like your competitors race you harder than they race the other competitors, just because you've had so much success and, you know, everyone, we're always talking about you. Do you ever get that feeling?
100%. I notice it like pretty clear as day. I mean, I can see just watching on videos of some of the times they kind of, their passes is a little bit more aggressive. I think to everyone else's eye, they don't really pick up to a race. You can see there's that little bit of extra like oomph about that pass. So, I mean, and to me, that doesn't bother me too much because I know for me, it's a good sign. It's like, oh, I'm obviously doing pretty good then for them to trying to be a bit more mean with their pass and that stuff. And for me, I still look at that like kind of, yeah, okay, but I'll still try and pass them clean because I know that wrecks a person mentally if someone passing them clean and dropping them.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, you know, being in your position, you have a target on your back and it's really, really big, you know, after knocking down this many wins and going into your fourth championship and clinching that, like the target on your back is big. And it's sometimes a good and a bad thing.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I've like Johnny's obviously said that because Johnny said, even kind of coming into as a rookie in 2020, because I didn't get probably as much hype as you could say, like as a Hayden Deegan, like this year, but I had a little bit of kind of a small bit of hype, you could say, after Monster Cup winning that and kind of coming out of nowhere. And I naturally had a little bit of a target on my back then because I was such a young kid. I was 16. So obviously the older guys didn't want to get beaten by a 16-year-old, so they would race me a little bit harder. But definitely the last few years, you could kind of feel that target on your back. But I mean, if I had it there or not, I don't think it doesn't faze me at all, I could say. I mean, you could say I have it there, but once I'm on the track, I don't see that. I see what I need to do, and that's what I need to make sure I need to execute what I'm seeing.
Hey, what was the hardest thing for you to learn in Supercross? Like at the first year in 2020, you know, you're making some mistakes, but what was the hardest thing for you to overcome to where you're like, okay, Supercross is completely comfortable for me?
I would say that like, I think definitely last few years, it's, you could see that, but it took me a bit to go kind of realize, like, hey, I don't have to go like 100% to like go fast. So I was trying to do like almost qualifying laps in a main event where it's like, no, you're not, like, and trying to keep those lap times. And then in the qualifying, I was trying to go even faster where whatever would happen, I was kind of getting out of control and dropping back and kind of doing silly mistakes that I just didn't, I didn't have any experience of. So I was kind of learning throughout the way in 2020, and it ended up costing me at Anaheim too. I kind of got the faith, like, got the muscle memory of, hey, I wanted to go faster, so I'd lean back.
Yeah, there you go. You see it. Walk us through this right here.
You can already see here, I'm just already leaning back trying to get the thing to drive. We missed some, but those whoops weren't as gnarly. They were kind of small. Where these ones, I just kind of came in with not as much speed as I normally do, and I got back, and then normally I kind of ride them out with missing a whoop, but we missed one and missed a whole whoop with both wheels. Normally I just miss with the front wheel and then we're okay, but this one we missed a whole whoop with both of them. And I just ended up just having to learn this, hey, like, it's a, even still now I'll miss a whoop every now and then just of kind of what, how I get kicked in that stuff. But back then when I'd get miss a whoop, I'd go back even further. So then I'd end up kind of just clipping one at top and then going low again, where now it's kind of like you just wheel tap the thing like it's a normal jump and stuff like that. Where you just, I think you just learn, I learned over time. But the most biggest thing is just calming down, relaxing. And what we would say is not riding like an amateur. If you watch an amateur rider nowadays, they're very energetic.
Now you just bummed out the amateurs, dude.
Yeah, like, I mean, we would call them Instagram clips almost, because it looks sick for Instagram, like an edit of scrubbing this hard, doing this, you look fast. But I mean, if you look at Hunter and I, we don't look that amazingly fast. But if you look at the lap times compared to other guys, it's the same or if not better, because it's more, for us, it's more in motion, it's more smooth, it's not so erratic. We're just doing what's needed, not to go over and above almost.
Yeah, no, I mean, watching from old footage like that, you know, make a mistake in the whoops. I can remember, I think we're at Milestone. And I don't remember if you were there, but I think Hunter was getting ready for his Supercross season, the very first one. And we were out there, there's a pretty big set of whoops. And I was like, number one thing, dude, keep your one finger on the clutch in the whoops. Cause that is your only option in the whoops after, if you make a mistake, is if you don't have your finger on the clutch, is to give her more gas. You can't let off in that situation, right? So I think I see you do that a lot, keeping your index finger on the clutch, because that is your call it safety net. Yeah, safety net. If track wheel spin or, you know, you miss one, you can recover.
And I actually, it's funny you said it. So a lot of the times whenever I actually will tap through whoops, like in the middle of them, if anyone has a video of it, it'd be cool if they have a slime, because whenever I'm like middle of the whoops and wheel tap, I'll pull my clutch and when it hits it. So I make sure that front drops to hit that next whoop. But it's crazy because I see a lot of guys running no finger on the clutch. I'm like, dude, I can't do whoops without it now. I mean, and a bad habit, when I first went in 2020, when I through the whoops, a lot of time I kept slipping the clutch right before every whoop. I'd go and just spike it a bit, and it almost end up worse because I'd go end up making it spin, especially on like West Coast when it was a lot harder whoops. I end up creating a habit before every whoop. I'd just kind of lightly flick the clutch and like get the wheels spinning faster because I was in fifth then. And end up almost being worse, where like now I won't touch it through the whoops, but then if I want to jump out or something, you just spark it a little bit, just like, brah, get out.
Yeah, it makes total sense, right? That was one thing. I think Dazzy was there and he's like, well, you know, give us just one tip. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. If you watch James, you know, he's obviously one of the fastest guys in the whoops a lot of times, but he has also had some major crashes. And in my opinion, my theory is the only option he had to do was give her more gas because there was no safety net because he rode without his finger on the clutch in the whoops.
Yeah. No, that's for sure.
I couldn't imagine. I was a no clutch guy through the whoops, but yeah, I couldn't imagine going through the whoops and holding your finger on the clutch as well. Like, dude, I'm just holding on to the handlebars so I don't crash.
There's a lot of things like, oh, we'll never really I'm very like, only times I have my fingers, most time I have my finger always on the clutch.
Really?
But a lot of the time, just like with anything, because like with seat bouncing out of a, like coming, say, out of a turn in Supercross, you got a three, at the very bottom of the thing, I'll flick my clutch just to like, so then that engine on the 250 side of things, a 450, I don't think you have to do it as much. I'll probably still do it a bit just because it's muscle memory, but just so that engine doesn't die down so much in the GS, but it kind of really re-sparks it a bit to really get that grunt out of it. But I always have both pointer fingers on front brake and clutch, even in turns always. On front brake, I'll take it off through rhythms, and that sucks. A lot of times I don't really need it in the rhythms, but landing into a turn naturally just comes on.
So you joined the four-time club with myself, RV, and Stu, is with four 250 titles or 125 titles back in my day. Looking ahead, how excited are you to go to the 450 class, and what are your expectations in the motocross championship?
I mean, you could lie and say I have expectations, but obviously it's a
come race. On, don't be shy, Jet. Let's hear it. Here, give it 101 right now. Hit us with
it. Yeah, you have where you want to be. So, I mean, I'm excited. And obviously you got to see a little bit of nations of what I could do on a 450.
That's a little flex right there, RV.
That's right.
but then again, it's like the day before at nations, it was on dry, and I could do those guys' lap times, but that was with 4 weeks of 450 before it, I think it was. And I think after Nations, I got to spend 6 weeks, and we found out that the more time I spent on the actual 450, the even faster I got. So after Nations, I got even more, like even faster from what I did at Nations, just because I had more time on the bike and just got more in sync with it. So I'm obviously, as myself, I want to, and going off 250, knowing where I am, I have to win. That's what I'm meant to do. And 450s, I wouldn't say I have to win, but that's the kind of fun thing about being a rookie. You get away with, okay, yeah, if you get a fifth and that stuff, I mean, it's okay. But I think because of Nations, I don't get that much at all. So I think I honestly hope to be podiums, to be honest. I feel like I'm capable of that easily, because when you look at it, we've done kind of went down the data of last year 250 through outdoors to 450. I mean, when Chase and Tomac were out front, they were kind of pushing each other, and it was hard to tell because a lot of the race that those two guys were pushing himself the whole moto, and I was out front. It was kind of the moment where the Hunter got a bad start, so I was cruising and that stuff. It ended up being like 16 seconds behind, I think it was. So we're putting that to our frame in our training days the past few weeks with Hunter and I. And a lot of times we'll do a 40-minute moto, and a lot of times it'll be like I've been 18 seconds in front of Hunter, kind of varies and that stuff. But obviously it's different because the track is deeper, so obviously it pulls the bike down. So obviously there's so many more things into spec, but we've been doing some data, some research and that stuff, and we can't say I should be somewhere around there, but I'm hoping to be up there battling with the guys, because I can tell you now I'm not going to be learning anything from Chase. Obviously, it's a sad thing. Tomac got injured, so I was looking forward to learning from him, because that's kind of like one of our legends from that I get to race now, where, I mean, I feel like I can speak for a lot of riders to get either race you, Ricky, in your last year, or RV in your last year, to kind of get that chance as a rookie to learn from one of them legends. It's kind of like, for me as a rider, I'm like, oh, I would have loved to learn that, because they have so much more experience than I do. And obviously they have the stats to back it up. So, I mean, I would have loved to got to race Eli, but I guess I get to learn some more stuff off of Chase. I think maybe Dylan Ferrandez also, and a few other guys out there. But I'm looking for podiums mainly. Podiums and just kind of see where I am in the first four rounds, and then if it's going good, maybe we switch it up a bit, change the plan, but we'll see how it goes.
So hey, switching gears real quick, both you and I are partners with Quadlock, and I'm thinking of a little Quadlock Strava challenge, and Osho's doing a little side hustle with me. He's preparing me for a couple of clients, and I want to do a quad lock Strava challenge with you in the off season. Got to get through the SMX championship first. So after that, the longest climb that you can think of, we need to have a bro off. You want to take that challenge?
Yeah, you would pick the longest climb because you know I'm good on the short stuff, huh?
I mean, duh. I mean, of course.
I already know what climb you're thinking of over in Johnny's area. I already know the one because he said you love that climb always.
It's my favorite one. You want a piece on that or what?
What's the name of it, Ricky?
I'll give you a shot. I'll give you a try.
It's Mathis.
I'll be nice.
You know where Mathis. RV, you know, oh, see now, hey, RV might want to get in on this.
I'll get on it on the, I'll get that on the e-bike, bro.
Yeah, I was about to say, Ryan's going to be on the e-bike. Maybe we'll team up on you. I'll get RV to tow me into it, maybe.
There you go. I would challenge you in golf, but I am absolutely horrendous at golf. And how was your score today?
It was horrible. I mean, it wasn't the greatest either, so who knows? We could be a good match.
So you didn't keep track?
No, we kept track today. We just don't want to say the number because it was that bad. It was not good at all.
All right, so how many balls did we lose then? How many balls
did we lose? We didn't lose a lot of golf balls, surprisingly. We didn't lose a lot of golf balls. We lost, I think, two golf balls. But
how many times
we had a lot of, like, pardon?
How many times did you top it today?
Oh, that was our biggest problem, was topping it. I would swing. I kept like lifting up. It was so bad. So there was a lot of like safe shots everywhere, like of just topping it, then like running out to like the start of the fairway and then hitting again. So wasn't the best.
My golf game is based off how many balls I lose. And if I lose a box of balls, that's my score count. I don't even keep track of there. I'm out of balls, boys.
Oh, that's when you know when to finish. All right.
Boys, back to the clubhouse for a drink.
Jet, we appreciate you coming on Title 24. You've done a great job. You're a great ambassador for the sport. Congratulations on 4 small bike championships, being East-West champion, 2-time outdoor champion. Best of luck going into the Pro Motocross Championship. And you guys, you keep doing you, man. You're a lot of fun to watch. You're great for the sport. You're a great role model. And we appreciate you for joining us today.
Yes.
No, thank you guys heaps. It's been a pleasure coming on here. Hopefully, maybe give me another couple of years and on 450, hopefully we get up there with your guys' records on that. Maybe we'll see. But I'm going to keep working at it and hopefully we get my name up there with you guys and Eli and that on maybe some women's. But we'll see. Hopefully it goes good. Keep at it with Osho and we should be there one day.
You bet. Good luck this weekend.
I don't doubt it.
Ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Man, what a great combo with Jet, man. He's just he's so lighthearted, right? It doesn't even seem like he's stressed to me.
No, he's a lot of fun. You know, I guess that's what watching him, I could definitely say I'm jealous of him, you know, like I should have been more like him. It's like, be more like Jet, you know, or what was the quote with Michael Jordan? Be like Mike. Let's be like Jet.
Yeah.
You know, that's the jam. I think that's what everybody should, try to replicate. You know, it seems like they're doing a phenomenal job.
right? You think he gets it done this weekend and beats his brother at the showdown, or what do you think?
You know, I do think, I mean, obviously as we know, it comes down to a start. And I think if they're both up front, I would love to see them both duel it out. Right. They're both going to play it smart, 'cause they're both getting moved. You know, he's going to move up to 450 and doesn't want to jeopardize anything there, but I think they'll race each other really hard. You know, they training partners during the week. So, they know each other like the back of their hand, I bet. So they can race very close.
You know, it's crazy. And I don't know how many people know this, but you know, he's talking about the 450 and you could tell he's holding back, right? I feel like he's more confident than what he led to believe. And he gave us a little flex there with the MX of Nations comment, but he's been on that 450 since before Daytona, and he only rides the 250 when he goes to the race. So that's just to show you how much the guy has been prepping. Isn't it crazy? Like, he's been on the 450 for what, 3 months now? And so I think he's going to be more than ready.
I do too. I think that those guys are probably going to be, I don't know if in trouble is the wrong word, but I think they're going to have to deal with him, you know, most of these races. And I think, you know, it's a bummer to see Eli. Like, he was bummed that Eli's hurt. And I think the what I look at is it's Jet moving in at the era's changing and Eli's on his way out. I think that's probably the one thing from me looking at Hunt or Jet and Eli, like him not being able to race Eli. Yeah. Yes. Learn a lot from Eli, 'cause he's a veteran, but also just that changing of the guard, almost like Eli's on his way out. He'll never get to probably race him. Maybe we'll see. Hopefully Eli gets back and they will be able to race, but that would be a cool thing for Jet at, you know, his age coming in with his stats, and then Eli with his age and his stats on the way out, you know, to duel it out. That would be cool to see.
Yeah, he talked about too, like Seattle, he was a little off. I mean, you have to guess. And then they couldn't ride press day that because of the rain. So he's been, like I said, if he's always riding the 450 during the week, could you imagine going back to the 250 and just the only time you ride it is at the race?
I mean, I think as an amateur, yes, that's what we all used to do, right? You'd right. swap bikes, but I never swapped motorcycles at this level. So I think, yes, at this level, swapping motorcycles and having four all week on a 450 and then the weekend on a 250, let alone supercross, it's one thing to swap for motocross for different bikes, because it's fast, it's wide open, but you're going from one motorcycle with one discipline to another motorcycle with a whole different discipline, which I think it'd be easier to go from a like 250 to a 450 for supercross, but he's going down in power and the bikes are completely different with the way the torque is. So I think that would be a tough transition for on weekends. Yeah. I do.
Yeah, certainly. And you've talked about it. I can't remember what episode it was, RV, but it's a testament to just how forward thinking the Lawrence brothers in the inner circle and the riding coaches, how forward thinking they are in preparing. You know, it's almost like, you know, the 250 West Coast Championship, obviously they wanted to win, but the main priority and focus was the 450 motocross championship. And for our viewers and our listeners, that's what great champions do, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You have to, you know, I think that's where, once again, they're changing the game from marketing standpoint to the forward thinking of to get ready. You know, like, you'd never see at this point, even today, like, you'd never see a team pull their rider off of the championship, essentially, right? Pull it off and move him to another motorcycle, have him get ready for the championship in the future, which is outdoors for him, but they're still obviously expecting him to win, and he's expecting himself to win Supercross too. But that just shows you the belief that everybody has behind this program, and you know, they know exactly where they're going. There's no guessing game over there.
No, you're exactly right. Well, I'm glad he gave us this time, right?
Oh, awesome. It's phenomenal.
Salt Lake City preview. Before we show some of our old highlights from Salt Lake City, Let's show you what's going on at NBC. Big weekend for motorsports. You got always Thursday, SMX Insider with Jason Wygant, Daniel Blair. Check that out on YouTube. And then IndyCar Series is going to Indianapolis Grand Prix. That's at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. And then 4:30 race day live starts on Saturday. Practice and qualifying. Check that out on Peacock. And then, of course, the final round, Monster Energy AMA Supercross at Salt Lake. That's at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. And then Sunday, check out SMX, always the SMX Insider show. You can see it right there, the post show, that is, where we break down the what went on with the races. And then check out MotoGP for the Grand Prix of France at Le Mans. It's going to be great. MotoGP is always fun. If you've never been to one, you got to check one out in person. But you can see that on CNBC at 3 o'clock p.m. Sunday. So some great racing. Now, RV and I are going to tell you guys some stories. We got some clips of our times at Salt Lake City. You already saw one of them, but if we can roll that one again from 2002, is my first championship on Honda. Really special night. It had been a long time since Honda had won a Supercross championship. I think the last time they had won was when MC was racing, the King of Supercross. So just fun. You can see the emotion there. That's Jeff Stanton that I'm riding up to. I didn't think I was going to win the championship because I had crashed at the season opener, and then I got a gift. Yeah, you can see the podium. We're watching the podium and see all the great people that it took to get that. I did have an unpleasant time there, and it was the next year in 2003. We got some B-roll there. It's been talked about. There's the Deuce getting after me right there. He takes it down. Now, we're getting tight in points, so all bets were off. Nothing wrong with that. I probably would have done the same thing. This is the finish line. I'm going over the finish line, and I am beyond heated up. I have a little conversation with my man, Steve Mathis from Pulp MX. Now, this is when he was a factory mechanic, right? Look at it. Yeah, I'm just saying, man, I love you so much, and I just really admire what you do. I think I gave him motivation to get on Pulp, start Pulp MX after that. But no, I was more fired up at he was working for Tim Ferry at the time, a great friend of mine. And Timmy had fell because of me. And then as I was coming up to lap him, he was blocking me and just doing what I thought he shouldn't have. But certainly it was heated up. So there's some great footage from Salt Lake City. I didn't
Big
like
J right there.
Hey, I will tell you. Yeah, you saw Big James right there.
Even
Curly. I mean, JH was he was in there firing people up. I remember Doug from Bridgestone was trying to get JH's hard card revoked, getting him kicked off the premises. But that was fun. I will say Salt Lake City has some of the most generous fans. So gracious. But I didn't like racing there because of the altitude, and the bikes were so slow. And those were the two-stroke days, and you touched on it a lot. I mean, imagine how slow the two-strokes were compared to the 450s. Imagine what it was like in altitude. But let's talk about your story at Salt Lake City.
Yeah. It was good time. I was like watching your bars, man. Your bars were like so far rolled back on that Honda. It was pretty crazy to see your bike setup compared to today. And versus back then, you know, things have come just so far.
Mm-hmm. It has. We got a clip of you, RV, in 2013, Salt Lake City. Walk us through it, dude.
Yeah, man, this was me and Davey. I think one of Davey's best years, was able to get a quick move on Dunge there. But I was, once again, we got to talk about altitude. And Davey was able to move up and was killing me in these set of whoops here. Just lap by lap, but I was able to hold it together. I will have to say, though, one of the shortest starts I think I've ever raced this weekend here. I think it was like we stayed in second or first gear, whatever we started in. There we got Bones coming up. There's Mikey, my mechanic. I think my dad's down on the floor too here soon. Rick Ash right there. He was our engine builder, you know, so super short start, super nerve-wracking coming in, because literally we never got out of second gear, and it was a hard left-hander. And I just wanted, I mean, Davey that year was unbelievable, right? So kept me on my toes that entire race. And if he would have ended up passing me there, it would have went down to, I believe, the last round. because I don't think that was the last round there. I think it was still Vegas.
Yeah.
But yeah, but no, overall it was a good weekend.
Did you like racing there?
So it definitely could feel the bike, but we were fuel injected already, and you know, things had come a long ways. I don't believe I ever raced a 250 or a 250F at anything at altitude other than Colorado, which is outdoors. So for Supercross, you know, it makes a bigger difference with carbureted, right? So when everybody moved up to fuel injection, it was a big leap in technology for the motorcycle. So being able, they were able to go there, then we were pretty soon everybody's gotten a road race guy, right? A road race electronics guy that's coming in. Like Theo was our guy that pulled him from road racing, plug it in, adjust it all on the computer. You know, so that was big leap for motorcycle or for supercross racing, especially at altitude for our sport, which made it a lot better.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, dude, it's been great. We had the 250 West Coast champ on. Jet's always fun to talk to.
We always.
We broke it down for everyone on the 450 side. We beat that one too. We can't beat it anymore, but right. I don't know. You never know. You don't expect anything too wild this weekend in Salt Lake, do you?
I don't, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, we kind of know what's happening, right? It's pretty much already wrapped up, but I want to see, honestly, I'm going to say it again. I've said it before, the post interviews after podium or at podium speeches and the emotion that I'm seeing out of Barsha, Eli, AC, and soon to be Chase, probably, right? Really love to see that. You know, it's like coming up on his first year. What I'm looking forward to this weekend is this coming weekend is to see when Chase wraps it up, the emotion side of it, because it's such a huge thing. And I love to see it because I never did it. And that's what it feels like, folks. Anybody that's watching Supercross, those are the emotions that are internally that if we can't get them out, that's what it is.
All right. Well, we appreciate everyone watching and listening. We appreciate our partners, United Motorsports, Boxo USA, and Quadlock. Thank you guys very much to everyone who watches and listens to Title 24. You can check in. Make sure you subscribe, you like, you comment, send those questions into Instagram. And we will we'll pick a favorite winner in the question of the week each week. Make sure you check it out on Motorsports on NBC YouTube page, all your favorite podcast sites, and we appreciate the support. It's been a lot of fun, and always remember it's on demand on Peacock, so you can go on the Peacock app and check out RV and I. So we appreciate all the support, and we'll see you guys next week.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.